purposes of today, it's important that I kind of highlight three of the changes, and they're the first three that are listed on the slide on the screen. The Supreme Court changed the manner in which lawyers can deal with clients with diminished capacity. The Supreme Court changed the law, the rules regarding when a lawyer may and may not, and in what manner may and may not disclose confidential information to secure legal advice as to what is ethically appropriate with regard to representing clients. And the Supreme Court changed the rules regarding a lawyer's disclosure of confidential information to secure legal advice. Now, it's kind of outside the scope of today's CLE to talk about what those changes are and what the effect is, but let me suffice to say, or let it suffice to say, that the changes are designed to give lawyers more tools and more flexibility in terms of dealing with clients than they had before these amendments go into effect on July 1st, 2021. So the first question we have to ask when talking about representation agreements is, what's the standard of review going to be when a court, fact finder, arbitrator looks at these agreements? And the answer is, lawyers for the longest time have thought they know what the standard is, but there really is some room for doubt in Texas jurisprudence. And that's, it's amazing to think that, because there have been so many legal malpractice cases over the course of decades, you would think that this would be absolutely ironclad and everyone would know what the law is. But the reality is that the Supreme Court of Texas has not directly addressed that issue. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, about almost 40 years ago now, my goodness, in Nolan versus Foreman, did address that issue. But I want to stress, this was the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, not the Texas Supreme Court. And what they essentially said is that a fiduciary relationship between an attorney and his client extends even to preliminary consultations between the client and the attorney regarding the attorney's possible retention. That is really important language, because lawyers have argued, and I've been involved in cases as a lawyer or and as an expert, where lawyers have argued that from the second the client walks through the door or shows up on the lawyer's Zoom screen and they begin to talk about the representation, the fiduciary obligations of a lawyer step up and take place. But the fact of the matter is that even though the Fifth Circuit said that the fiduciary responsibility is attached when the client entered into discussion of the legal problems with a view towards undertaking representation, that language, again, has never been approved by the Supreme Court of Texas. It was discussed in the Supreme Court's Lopez decision, but only in a concurring and dissenting opinion. So to assume that the Nolan case is the standard of review in Texas, I think is assuming too much. And I think in an appropriate case, when the question arises, what was the relationship of the parties, the lawyer and the client, during the formation stage of the representation agreement, I think there's room for debate and discussion and argument that it is arm's length rather than fiduciary. And that'll be important for reasons we'll see in just a few moments. Now, there's an opinion from the Dallas Court of Appeals, again, a no petition opinion, so it doesn't have the blessing of the Supreme Court. But in Gillis versus Provost and Umphrey back in 2015, the Dallas Court of Appeals said that the attorney-client relationship arises from the clear and express agreement of the parties about the nature of the work to be done and the compensation to be paid. Well, that to me sounds like the relationship doesn't begin until the details of the representation have been hammered out and there's agreement on them. The court went on to say that the determination of whether there was a meeting of the minds must be based on an objective standard, examining what the parties did and said, and not on their alleged subjective states of mind. Again, I think this is worlds different from the Fifth Circuit's analysis of the attorney-client relationship back in the Foreman case. So these two cases, I think, represent opposite ends of the pole in terms of whether or not the lawyer-client or fiduciary relationship is imposed from the minute the client walks through the lawyer's door, or whether it follows from the lawyer and the client hammering out the details of the representation and getting an agreement in place. So the reason this is important is because once the attorney-client relationship is formed, the Supreme Court of Texas has been very clear about the elevated responsibilities and duties that the lawyer then owes the client. The Supreme Court said in the Hoover-Slovichak case, when interpreting and enforcing attorney-client fee agreements, it's not enough to simply say that a contract is a contract. There are ethical considerations overlaying the contractual relationship. And the court went on to say, paramount among these ethical considerations is the fiduciary obligation mandated by the professional nature of the attorney-client relationship.